with Steve Bick. And off. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Series 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Series 6, I'm online and at the website, stevebeck.com. And this a Thursday morning that brings us into focus for the big weekend at Del Mar. That card complete now. I didn't even get to the yesterday. Yesterday was such a rocket sled kind of a show, where things just, oh, there's Michael blowing out. And then that, you know, next thing you know, you look up, it's noon. I like that. It's fun, though. I got, actually, thanks to everybody who really particularly enjoyed, Michael and then Rasai Harper. Really, just everywhere he goes and you know, as the word spreads and, you know, the awareness of what he's doing spreads. It's like that. It's like that house person, the woman brings joy. Does it bring joy? Yes, Rasai Harper brings joy. But it didn't get a chance to lay out the Pacific Classic field, which was drawn, and then the rest of the card came together yesterday, and so we'll obviously tomorrow be plenty of handicapping conversation. Jay Pribman, and of course, in addition, as the topic came up Tuesday, after Jay had let it be known that when Del Mar ends, his long, successful, highly decorated and respected turf riding career will end. And so, in addition to the handicapping portion of the discussion with Jay and his thoughts on flight line and so much more, we'll also talk about that story. So, and Jay, I didn't pick up on it, but Jay did last Friday. He did dangle a participle. He doesn't do it in writing. There's no participle dangling. But he did foreshadow what was happening. The Pacific Classic, and it revolves around flight line, undoubtedly and certainly, and to nobody's surprise. And he draws 5 of 6, and Flavian Pratt heads out back west. You know, given that he's closely associated and has been the only pilot for Flightline. But this is one of those handicap division fields, and of course we're seeing Flightline being asked to go 1.25 miles, and so that question, you know, is the, you know, there's lots of other interesting things happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but this is the question, and this is the most interesting dynamic available to us as players and fans. So, flight line from the 5-hole and from the rail, and it's kind of interesting that Extra Hope shows up in this spot coming out of the Cougar, where ran a very even third for Dick Mandela and Samantha Siegel. I say it's kind of opportune or kind of funny because today Kentucky Downs, did you pick up on this? Let me tell you. let me turn to the Kentucky Downs materials for a second. Because, you know, you got these two-year-old maiden races, and Samantha Siegel and Paul McGee debut lots of mischief. Why is this relevant? Because it's a half-brother of Extra Hope. Yeah, So kind of cool. If you hadn't noticed that, FYI. And I just noticed this is not stapled. Boink. Extra Hope from the One Hole with Tyler Bayes. And this Tyler Bayes situation where the mood medication that has kept him from riding. It's the craziest. Jay laid it out on Friday. It's just unbelievable how this thing has lingered, and it's really feel terrible, for him to miss the kind of patch that he has. So anyway, Tyler Bayes and Extra Hope from the Rail, Country Grammar, and of course, Country Grammar does particularly enjoy a classic trip, and all you got to do is go to the World Cup performance and the Gold Cup effort earlier in his career. So he's won twice going the mile and a quarter. And fifth in the Travers. That was his, because he had three, right? Yeah, fifth in the Travers, because he had the one off-the-board attempt at 10 panels. So, Country Grammar with Johnny V back aboard. Johnny with him ran second, and I think a lot of us, the 2-to-1 price, people, I think, kind of recognized, first race back from the World Cup, and really, the mile and the 16th, not nearly as popular a distance for him as a mile and an eighth and beyond. So Country Grammar, who's a serious threat, a horse that has run a couple of, mid-100 buyers. You go back to the Californian and the Gold Cup, 108 and 106. Royal Ship for Mandela, the midshipman for the late Rick Porter. And Sienna Farm. And the six-year-old gelding won the San Diego. He has jumped up and won races. There's no, it's kind of difficult to know when exactly and what the conditions have to be for him to be successful and impact a race on the win end. Last year in the Pack Classic, he came out of the San Diego, where he was third, beaten favorite 3-2, and came back and went off at 3-1 and didn't run a step. He's a funny horse. Express Train. John Sheriff's, of course, and the CRK team. CRK is now on Twitter, by the way. I saw that. I followed them, maybe 2 months ago. I think they, six, eight weeks ago, they joined up. Now, he's another horse that has been successful at the distance. He actually is also a Del Mar fan and has run well historically at Del Mar. So, Express Train from the four with Victor. Mike Smith, by the way, with Royal Ship. He's been long associated with Royal Ship. Victor Espinoza, who made a quick trip here to New York with CC. Flight Line in the five hole, and then Stiletto Boy for the Mogers, coming out of a third in the San Diego, and he's just a nice horse. 4-year-old gelding, 3 wins, has made $1 million, won the Californian, solid citizen, as they say. So 6-pack, led by Flight Line, all eyes will be there on him. And, one thing that's notable, there's really no other speed that, is going to light out here and set up any kind of he's going to be on the lead, and that's that. So, in fact, let's go to the, since I happen to have Timeform US open, and I hadn't done this yet, let's take a look, just out of curiosity, if there's any. No. Actually, it's interesting. They're Timeform US is calling it a fast pace, and it's more or less because all of the principals are all horses on the Timeform pace scale on CJ's numbers that are all, I mean, they're all impressive. tough to be more impressed than the 133 for Flightline. Yeah, the next closest is a 114 for Stiletto Boy and a 110 for Country Grammar. So you would think that, you know, Johnny Velasquez is probably the guy to watch coming out of the gate. And, you know, Country Grammar has been successful on the front end with how he won the World Cup, right? And he's also comfortable, you know, kind of sitting off. And the way he's drawn, you know, Johnny's tendency is always to go forward. So you would think that it's going to be Country Grammar, that it will be inside and you know, trying to stay within striking distance, if not even potentially sparring a little bit with Flightline. We'll see. There's your six, and the rest of the card is just terrific. It's been such a great meet, and after the Pack Classic, which we should note, I saw somebody at the track was discussing this, I think, right, yesterday? What's the post time? 5:30 Pacific, so 8:30 Saturday night on the East Coast for the Pack Classic, all right? And then the nightcap, the anchor leg on everything, goes off at 9 p.m., and that's the Del Mar Handicap, the mile and 3/8 standard. How about Tis a Magician, Mandela? Does Phil D'Amato have an emerging type in Gold Phoenix, an Irish import that Little Red Feather offers? Tried the Whittingham and actually hit the board okay. Dicey Moshera, Leonard Powell, Leo, and Red King for D'Amato. D'Amato's always well represented in these. Jack Sisterson, who is on the duck, by the way, so far. He brought that string to California, and it's been a rough go for Jack. He'll win. He'll get a win. Master of Foxhounds for D'Amato. Sadler's got Hayward's Beach coming out of the Cougar win. Michael W. McCarthy, MWM. The Eddie Reed winner. This is a nice field. And Tesoro, too, in here. Who's, how old is he? He's only a four-year-old. The anchor down colt. So, I guess that's not who I'm thinking. He's not who I thought he was, as Dennis Green might say. He's not, they're not who we thought they were. the Del Mar Derby, of course, as well. The mile and an eighth for the boys. And this is fun. This is a nice group. Doug O'Neill with Slow Down Andy, who he's done all kinds of different things with. He's gone long and gone 7/8, and now he stretches back out. Slow Down Andy, the Nyquist for the Reddams. McKinnon, and it could be a very big weekend for Eric Johnson. The Stanley Cup coming to Del Mar, and the big Stanley Cup party that Eric has got planned. I would have loved to have gone out for that, certainly. Balnikov comes back. Drew Wide in here off the Oceanside win opening day. But this looked like a horse that was taking advantage of those restricted conditions. But Doug O'Neill, and as mentioned, here's McKinnon coming back. And Dandy Warhol for Mark Glatt off the allowance win. Tried the Oceanside and a tiny disappointment, just tiny. Glatt's also got a maiden he's going to run in the Del Mar Derby, and he wouldn't do this if he didn't think Spycatcher could be competitive. And Ward C, take a long gander at Ward C, making his first Del Mar start, the Warfront colt for Double Down, and Ron Ellis, this horse has won three straight, broke the maiden. came back with an allowance win, then won the cinema. Yeah, and feels like that Ron Ellis then, you know, kind of pointed for this. So, right? June gave him 60 days. That's the Del Mar Derby. It's a terrific card. I didn't even talk about the mile as well. Tripoli in there for Sadler and D'Amato, as always. I mean, any of these turf stakes, D'Amato is just always got to be closely monitored. And then early on the card, the shared belief, the three-year-old one-mile race as well. So, and then the rest of it, if you haven't looked, is just terrific. Allowances, and looks like an important maiden group, going 6.5 as the sixth, including the $1.2 million more than ready. Don Corleone. Yep. $1.2 million. And speaking of which, one thing this came up a little bit yesterday after we were done with Sid. We got to get Sid back to get a more than ready tribute in, because what a fabulous, and you know, he was a favorite of mine. It had a fabulous racing career, and then, you know, became a, you know, bit of a surprise as a stallion. To be, you know, for the longevity and for the impact that he's had. And the first, I saw that Todd's social media team put out a note. The first, I didn't realize this, the first Pletcher product to go to stud. That's what they tweeted. So, Del Mar Saturday is going to be great. And then, of course, every place is going to be, it's going to be very hard, frankly, Saturday, to keep track of everything. Because, of course, here at the Spa, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which came up very good, Tax, Olympiad, Untreated, Chess Chief, American Revolution, who's been shopping for a spot, First Captain, Keep Me in Mind, and Dynamic One. It's a really, really nice group, actually. Yeah, it feels like maybe it was a good... I said this last year. Moving the Gold Cup up here, the mile and a quarter, was a good move. In part because you don't have to start on the turn, you know, downstate at Belmont, and you can have a true mile and a quarter, you know, long run, you know, past the stands. But that's not it. As Steve Haskin pointed out, for a number of years, running the mile and a quarter in as the start before the Breeders' Cup had a tendency, and he had all, you know, Steve documented this, very fully, that it dulled, essentially, you know, took away some speed from horses. It basically dulled them heading into Breeders' Cup. And so moving it here and then giving an extra, you know, extra month, essentially, if somebody wants to run, you know, people are training up to Breeders' Cup, you know, more than ever. It used to be the only division that would have, you know, a long lead up. It would be the sprint. I mean, for years, the only division in the Breeders' Cup that you would play a horse that had been off 60 days or more, maybe even 45, but I think 60 was the number. The only place you would dare to play a horse was in the sprint. Anybody else for the longest time, and that, of course, that whole dynamic has gone the way of the dodo. there's an incredibly trite hackneyed expression. You don't hear that as much anymore, do you? Went the way of the dodo. Dick Powell joined. Dick, I made myself laugh. Good morning.
What a segue, jeez. Dodo and Dick Powell. Same sentence.
Am I right, though?
Yeah, you don't hear it much anymore because no one talks that way anymore.
I don't know if it ever associated with any one, you know, like an in particular. Growing up, that was an expression. That's before we had memes. Going the way of the dodo was a meme, but except that it was a verbal meme.
That was many moons ago. You know, as when Casey just called me, I went into my spreadsheet and I'm looking at all the winners that More Than Ready had in Hong Kong. And
yep.
Most of them were bred in Australia from the times that he stood down there. And I think he had three winners of the Golden Slipper, and which is a two-year-old race that's worth over $3 million. And he was just enormous down there. And that point you just made with Todd, I remember More Than Ready, I believe, either broke his maiden or won a stake on the undercard of the Derby, going like 4.5. I remember it won by like 11. It was a Friday before the Derby because I was doing a radio show that night. And More Than Ready had just won the sprint race by enormous margin. And he ran fourth in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, he could get middle distances, not long distances, but middle distances. And then he's just one of these horses that goes to stud and just thrives. Just anything, any mare they threw at him, he just did great with. So.
Well, he was refashioned late in the career too. I mean, or as a 4-year-old as a sprinter, and that worked. I mean, including the King's Bishop win, and he was in that fabulous, amazing Breeders' Cup sprint at Churchill in 2000, and actually finished fifth. Kona Gold, Honest Lady, Bet on Sunshine for Paul McGee, and Caller ID, Caller One, fourth, and then More Than Ready. That was a very good, an unequaled. It was Caller One. That's an unparalleled Breeders' Cup for me personally, Dick. That was unbelievable what went on that day through like the first five races.
I'm looking now. He broke his maiden at Keeneland on April 11th by 7.5. And then the day before the Derby, he won the WHAS Stakes, going 5 furlongs by 4.5 with Johnny. Johnny rode him like his first 10-11 career starts. Richie rode him once, going a mile late in the Haskell. But it just, you see these horses, they just, you know, they just take off at stud. The ones with the huge expectations don't always deliver. And now, I always thought he had an advantage. He's by Southern Halo, he's by Halo, which has the Alamu blood, and the Alamu blood always crosses well with the Northern Dancer blood. So, genetically, even though a son of Southern Halo wasn't really going to be in great demand, he had that nick, whatever you want to call it.
The genetic code, to throw the switch, and that was E.P. Taylor, Southern Halo.
Okay.
Yep, and E.P. Taylor, you know, blood, I think. Well, that's why we got to get Sid back, actually. Unless I'm mistaken, I'm gonna think back to... let's see. So his first crop would have been, if he finished in 2000, so 2001 covers, he had babies in 2002, So 2004 was his first crop. I remember the person who tipped the hand and let everybody know that More Than Ready was going to get turf runners was Lauren Stitch. Lauren Stitch wrote a piece about, you know, she had that, what she called the hidden turf stallion factor. And Lauren had an eye for, you know, knowing what kind of, you know, what stallion was gonna tick a turf box. And I absolutely remember her saying More Than Ready is gonna be a hidden turf sire. And she couldn't have been more right.
Yeah. And when he went to Australia, I'm trying to look it up. It's probably take too long, but he stood there at least 10 seasons. I mean, some horses go down there and they spend 5 or 6, and then they bring them back, and, you know, for whatever reason. And he was down there up until a couple of years ago. And it never bothered him, never bothered his fertility, anything like that. He just kept producing. Those horses were well valued down there in that market. And just an amazing, what we call a shuttle stallion. He's one of the best ever.
Well, it is proven, or at least we've discussed them with Sid, and I've also discussed it with Dr. Alday, that it is a demand on a stallion. I mean, not just, you know, people think, oh, the flying. Well, okay, there is some portion of that, the travel and the stress from the travel. However, the stress is from the physical exertion of basically having 2 seasons to cover mares. I mean, I'm sure people think, it's fun. It's not fun. It's not fun for stallions to cover 2 to 3 mares a day for 4 months. It's dangerous. Number one, they get kicked. They get. Yeah. It's not an easy scenario, and the physical exertion portion is demanding. So having, you know, to go stand the winter in North America and in the Northern Hemisphere, and then in the Southern Hemisphere again, is a lot to ask. I mean, we've had so many that have succumbed. I mean, it's been. And he was traveling the other side of the globe. not even traveling, you know, to, like, some down to South America.
Take my word for it. It's a long flight.
It's a schlep.
It's a schlep. Long exactly. Multiple, yeah, exactly. Multiple schleps to get there. And this is true of any stallion. If you take just about any stallion and move them from one farm to another, it doesn't even have to be a long ride. They are so set in their ways where they are, and most of them have a dominance to them, and you pack them up and move them, and man, it's not always a happy outcome when you do that. That can be very dangerous, and obviously temperament and things like that come into play, but stallions are different. So when they started doing this and flights got a lot easier to do, that took care of that part of the equation. But as you just pointed out, there's lots of other parts of the equation, but somehow he just thrived on it. He just did it year after year.
More Than Ready. We will get Sid's extra coverage and his thoughts. Let's hit a couple of spots as well, Dick. We've got, let me tell everybody what's going on this morning. Joe Christofek is going to join us in 15 minutes at 9:45. Joe loves Kentucky Downs and has got a very strong Kentucky Downs opinion. So we're going to get ideas from Joe today. I've already written up, I wrote up the first race and then 4th through 10th. And this is insane. I mean, you you better... You know, you better put on a suit of armor. And frankly, I've been hemorrhaging money all summer. I'm a little beaten about the head and face, Dick. So I don't know how I don't know how excited I am to, you know, to reach too much deeper. You know, given the Saratoga's been just crazy. I've handicapped like as well as ever, and can't cash a big ticket. It's unbelievable, and the two DQs didn't help, or the one DQ and the one non-DQ, but it's just gotten ridiculous.
Well, that's a good news story, though, because that means your process is working, and the volatility of the results is, aren't there, but they will be as long as the process is working. So if the handicapping is good.
Trust the process.
Don't change,
as we say in Philly.
Yes.
Dick, let me get some Saratoga stuff from you as we wind down.
My meat's obviously been kind of hit and miss because my life has been kind of hit and miss lately.
Yeah.
Last week I lost a brutal photo. Jimmy Bond had the lead in the last race, turf sprint. Luis Saez is riding, opened up. Here comes Chad. I didn't think he got me. He did. It was an $86
crazy photo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. And I had a $25 exacta, so that's $1,000 in the photo. Oh, man, that one hurt. Then another one, I made a bet, it won, and I didn't hit the confirm button.
Oh, jeez.
Made the bet, yeah. And that was 800. So it's not like I'm playing or following every day because of various reasons, but those two things are kind of tough to recover from, but when I'm just grinding, I'm okay, and I'll probably go over today for a while, and hope to get there Saturday, and then we have a birthday party for one of the granddaughters on Sunday, and then usually I go on Monday and bid adieu to all my friends that I see once a year. And, it's been... As far as the challenge, the turf racing is always a challenge because of trips and rides and things like that. So I much prefer dirt sprints, and we don't get really enough of them. Track got faster in the last couple of weeks, so don't forget that yesterday. And I was super impressed with Sherry DeVoe's first-time starter on Sunday, the great maybe. Because he drew the rail, first-time starter, drew the rail, had to be used down the backside to maintain his position. And Javier kept letting out a little bit, wind up going into the turn, battling somebody else for the lead on the worst part of the track. Turns for home and then gets this other spurt, comes home 24.02. I mean, I thought that was just visually awesome what he did. And I don't know where she'll be. I don't know if she'll go Keeneland Stake or something like that, or try a one-turn stake at Belmont. But, man, that horse was just... I know 110.24 wasn't the fastest two-year-old time in the meet, but, geez, that was just super impressive to me. So I thought she was great. I liked Artorias and the Travis, and it almost looked like he shrunk since the curling. he looked like Code of Honor. I mean, I don't think Code of Honor weighed 1,000 pounds. And Arturo's looks similar. He's making a decent move and then flattened out. And no one was beating Epicenter that Saturday at that distance. I thought Rich Strike ran a great race. I wish he could have gotten second to kind of redeem Eric and his team and stuff like that. But he just ran a terrific race. The undercard was great. And I started running through my head, Steve. Horses like American Pharoah went in the Haskell, and there was another one that came to mind, and now I'm drawing a blank on. But when you see horses win, eased up, jog to the finish. I'm not saying that record coming back is bad, but that's not a good thing for a horse. I think a horse needs to be ridden to the wire. And not doesn't have to be cowboyed or anything. But I think mentally that sends a bad image. And so I wasn't shocked Cody's Wish was able to beat him. In fact, I had Cody's Wish. And but Jackie's Warrior just came up short. Different race, different dynamic. You know, had everything his own way. In the Vanderbilt, this race, he didn't have everything his own way and got run down. But I look at those races where someone just wins in a canter, and they don't always come back and perform. And Jerry Brown used to talk about this with his, obviously with his performance figures, and how someone would say, yeah, but that one won eased up or ridden out, and Jerry would say, nope. Doesn't matter. The number is the number, and don't expect that the number was actually higher because they didn't do the exertion. So I wasn't totally blown away that Jackie's Warrior was beaten.
I was willing to believe it. I wanted Baby Yoda though. I thought Baby Yoda was the right lane. So I used him as a C. And, well, as it happened, you know what, I would have been okay. Yeah, that would have been okay, because on that point of the card. And then, of course, Guffo doomed things later on, so. But, I asked, I don't know if you heard yesterday when we had that conversation, and asked about what lessons there were, per se, from a ticket building standpoint in that scenario, because you had technical analysis who felt like a slam dunk and wins. What do you learn? I mean, how does that change an approach later, Dick, that you want to have a couple of tickets in that scenario?
I seem incapable of learning in the sense that if there's a horse I like, I always go forward. So if I like horse A, I might lead off a pick three, but I never end a pick three with horse A. I don't know why. I think it's too many years of reading comic books from the back to the front, and even now I get a newspaper, I always tabloid, they always start at the back. So I think it screwed me up for life. But I can't do it the other way. I do it one way. I can't do it the other way. So, ticket construction, not my strong suit. That's why I play the way I do, but I also play the way I do because I always want to have the lowest takeout. Same thing, sports betting. You know? I'm making win bets. I'm not making three-team parlays where I'm getting, lower odds than I should be getting. They're not going to give you the right odds. That's how they're going to make money. And it shows every year when these states publish their results, and the hold might be 8-9%, even though the hold on straight wagering is 5%. But all the parlays and all the teasers and all the gimmicks just raise the cost, and same thing with horse racing. So the good thing is I've learned over the years what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. So I kind of try to stay with the things I'm good at.
No,
taking
smart.
Taking me a while to get there.
Well, you're not alone on that front, certainly. Looking ahead here to close things out, and I mentioned Saratoga with this Jockey Club Gold Cup relocated, and the mile and a quarter makes a lot of sense. And that group came up very nice. I didn't mention the Flower Bowl, but the Flower Bowl, Warlike Goddess, comes back in this spot, but faces a few quality top types, and a horse like Temple City Terror, who just does not run a bad race. Unbelievable. The Saranac, the Saranac seemingly falling victim. In fact, Nick Tamaro wrote about this. I'm sure he'll say something tomorrow. We've had the schedule's got to be not overhauled, but there's certain placements of races, Dick, from the same division. You know, some of those restricted stakes, you know, three-year-old non-winners of a sweepstakes, you know, running in close proximity to a race like this. And, you know, so we end up with a five-pack when there might have been, you know, eight, nine, or ten otherwise. So there's some of that, but they, you know, the racing office does that after every meet.
And it's so hard. You saw three scratches yesterday out of the with anticipation. One of them was a vet scratch. Two of them, of course, entered at Kentucky Downs. And you look at Kentucky Downs entries, and it's Chad, it's Mike Maker, it's, you know, it's a lot of New York guys are down there, and yeah, with that kind of money. So once you start having choices, and one choice pays more than the other choice, yeah, you still got a ship there, and there's a chance that the weather could be bad and things like that. But that complicates it further, where, you know, we never used to have to deal with that. We, you know, way, way back, we went to Turfway after Saratoga from Kentucky. So the Kentucky horses stayed at Saratoga right to the end.
Yeah. Will you dive into Kentucky Downs much?
I'll look at it. I agree with you. It's probably more challenging than I need, more work than I need to do. So it's just I'll look at some of the Brad Cox horses and things like that. Make is always strong. It's a matter of utilizing time.
And especially we've got about just 2-3 minutes. Joe Christofek is going to join us at 9:45 and take us to the top of the hour. But Dick, we should also just start to hint that the Hong Kong conversations will commence starting as soon as next week.
Hong Kong begins at Sha Tin, November 11th. The news from this week was Joe Marrero will not ride the opening day. He's had some physical issues. He has to get to Hong Kong, and then he has to go through a rigorous exam, and they announced that he would not be riding opening day. Joe is, boy, he lost that riding title right at the end there to Zach Purton, who had 4 winners the closing night. So you expect Joe to really be outgunning. And the thing this year, Steve, that should help Zach is they raised the weights. So what used to be the high weight in the handicap is 133. It's now 135. And that brings everything up. So Zach always had this disadvantage, because Zach can rarely ride below 120. So now those mounts that are 118, 119 that he was missing out on, now he can possibly ride. So that's slight advantage for him, the upcoming meet. But, yeah, we're looking at a little bit more purse money. And all the big riders are back. The leading trainer in New Zealand's going to have his horses there. They usually, you know, no one comes into Hong Kong and just kicks butt, but he'll get going, and he's very, very good. So that'll be fun to watch, because probably get overbid at the beginning and things like that. But yeah, that's exciting. I've enjoyed the hiatus, but yeah, the hiatus is over.
Dick, I appreciate it, and we'll start gearing up, and we'll also start to gear down out of Saratoga and Del Mar, and we get into September, October Breeders' Cup, and it is September 1st, obviously, and we'll go from there. I will talk to you live from Kentucky Downs next Wednesday.
Oh, nice. Okay, safe trip down there, Steve.
I appreciate it, Dick Powell, but I will see you between now and Monday at the track, all right?
Hope so, yes.
All right. There we go. All Dick right, Powell, thanks. Everybody, and HKJC getting ready to re-engage. Going to have Joe Kristofek in, and he and I are going to look at the Kentucky Downs slate. I think the race I've had the most trouble with by far, and in fact, I haven't even written down the... I think I've settled on who I like, but I haven't written it into the write-up, is in the stake, is in the tappet. You got way too many horses that are making moves from dirt to turf here, and that brought this up with Hammer yesterday. I mean, that is going to be one of the real challenges. I mean, it's one thing when we're looking at the two-year-olds, and there's quite a few surface switches in the maiden races, the first and the fourth, today for the two-year-olds. In the $150,000 maiden special weights. But in some cases, they're horses that were reined off. Some races at Ellis and even Saratoga. And, you know, they were meant for the grass. So it's not so much a surface switch. In some cases, you know, horse might be a little dirtied up, including Chris Davis in the first, actually. I picked Boudica. I'm more than ready. this is a horse that was going to run at Indiana, and Chris Davis puts blinkers on as well. So he did get some learning out of the first start, which came 3 weeks ago at Indy. He was fifth, but who cares? He's more than ready, and it's supposed to be on turf, and this filly is out of a war chant mare. So this thing was turf meant every which way. So Boudica, for me, the two in the first. So we'll see what Joe's thoughts are. At the top of the hour, I think we'll get to Tony at some point this morning, but part of the second half hour today, or the second hour, we've got to have a few visits to pay tribute to Dink. Alan Dinkinson, who had been ailing and who we all were rooting for and trying to get him healthy. Several months ago, the hospital stay that was going to be kind of a make or break, and it wasn't, wasn't to be. The nice portion is that at least Dink got kind of a chance for a goodbye tour. Just 69, and as legendary a gambler and a huge supporter and proponent of racing, and a friend and wagering colleague of countless people around the game, including Paul Matisse. And I might not be easy for Paul to do this today. Jason Beam is going to join us. Jason got close to Dink. There's so many people we could call. Big Leo. Leo Vukmanovich. It's a little early right now, but Leo might be... I haven't even texted Leo yet, but I expect Leo will want to visit, and many, many, many more. I mean, if we opened the lines, and there'd be a week's worth of there'd be a week's worth of stories, that's for sure. After midnight on Wednesday, and I didn't see the news until we were off the air yesterday. In fact, I was even much later in the morning. Jason and Paul Matisse here in the next half hour to pay tribute to Dink. Right now, Joey the K, Joe Kristofek, rolls in, and one of Joe's favorite meets of the year is Kentucky Downs, and he knows the undulations of the Kentucky Downs circuit and the Kentucky Downs Oval like the back of his hand. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Steve. Merry Christmas.
There you go. That just shows you.
That's what it feels like to me. That's what it feels like. We're not racing, obviously, at Churchill right now. And, you know, I do, you know, Saratoga's meet is great. I've been playing a little bit of Ellis as well. But a good portion of my off-season bankroll, and I like to use the term invested because, you know, it's gambling. We all know that. But it's invested in this Kentucky Downs meet for a plethora of different reasons, and I'm sure we're going to talk about a few of those. But happy that the season is upon us.
Before we look at this opening day slate and pick some spots, give everybody, Joe, your primer for approaching the meet, because this is going to be irresistible to people, and every year they look at this for the first time, and there's people that don't realize you got an uphill stretch, and there's aspects of this that are quirky. And how do you suggest neophyte Kentucky Downs players and handicappers look at the configuration and the themes that seem to repeat themselves regularly?
Yeah, I'll give you a few pointers that, in general terms, you should be able to follow. First of all, with the configuration at Kentucky Downs, if you're looking at these sprint races, the 6.5 furlong, 7 furlong races, I really like to look for horses cutting back from, you know, two-turn mile races that have some tactical speed. So you want to have some finishing punch in these races, but you also, you know, want to be in a position to make your move on the turn. That's one thing I look for. Secondly, if you've got horses that have had previous success at Kentucky Downs, don't overlook that, particularly if they're horses that are coming off of a layoff. You want to pay particular attention to that. Certain jockeys do really well here, and I believe this is horse racing, not jockey racing. You know, the right jockey and the right horse can win, but you look at the French riders always seem to do well at Kentucky Downs, Florent Giroux, chief amongst them. Jose Ortiz has done great here. Tyler Gaffleone has done tremendously well at Kentucky Downs. So if you look up those stats, who's done well, who hasn't done well, you can kind of follow along that, because some riders, even if they're really good riders, Steve, they don't necessarily like riding at Kentucky Downs. But we all know how big the money is, and you got to take those opportunities when they come. And then pay attention to how the turf course is playing. It looks like it's going to be super firm the first couple of days. The rail's going to be out for the beginning portions of the meet. I remember last year on opening day, I was so excited for the Kentucky Downs meet like I am today, and we got quite a bit of rain, and honestly, it was an absolute crapshoot all day. We had 2 50-to-1 shots win. Horses were coming from off the pace. Horses were winning on the lead. You either handle the turf course or you didn't. I think you need to really pay attention to how it's playing. The vast majority of the meet last year, it was wide and off the pace until maybe the very last day when it kind of evened out. But I think a big part of the reason why was all the rain that we got, you know, the first day of the meet. So kind of get your feet wet. See how you think the turf is playing before you really, really sink your teeth into some of the horses that you like, particularly later on the card today and moving into this weekend.
What's your policy and approach? Personally, I wrote up the first and then the 4th through 10th. I thought the maiden races, Andy Serling taught me years ago about the maiden races here, and Andy would do all the pedigree work, you know, which is really his strength, and there's invariably some overlooked horses and just the sheer size of these fields, you know, when you're going to get 12 horses in each of these, and you fold in, you know, the distances, for instance, the mile is the 4th race for the boys, the 1st is 6.5 for the girls. What's the tendencies that you like on the maiden races?
We've seen first-time starters win a little bit more often than we did maybe 5 years ago in the last couple of years. But I heard, you know, you talking a little bit about the opener and Boudica coming in, Steve. And I agree with you. I want a horse, for the most part, and I look at the pedigrees as well and look for horses that I think are being pointed to the Kentucky Downs meet with these massive purses by their trainers, and obviously not having any turf at Churchill, I think, is a big part of this as well, coming out of the Arlington Million Day and our spring meet, et cetera, and knowing that there's not going to be grass at Churchill in September, trainers may be taking a little bit of a different approach. But I agree with you. I like to see a horse that maybe has a little bit of experience, regardless if it's on turf or dirt, looking at those pedigrees, looking for horses that have a right to improve. But when those horses get out on that turf course, it's a different experience than anything they'll ever experience probably the rest of their careers. So having a race of experience, I think, goes a long way.
Let's take a look, then. Let's start right off the bat with the 6.5 furlong 2-year-old filly group that kicks off the meet.
Yeah, I mean, Boudica is a horse that I'm leaning on a little bit. You look at the first race was intended. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I heard you coming in with that one. You know, it was intended for the turf on debut, Steve, and you look at that pedigree, more than ready, War Chant. You get the blinkers on. You paid $145,000 for this horse as a yearling. Not going to hold that debut race against the horse. Was kind of in a claustrophobic position. The workouts since look good. Chris Davis, a solid up-and-coming trainer. You know, the jockey, I don't think, has very much experience at Kentucky Downs, so that bothers me just a little bit. But I went with Boudica as the top choice. I went with the 10, Carnaby Street for Wesley Ward. Again, turf pedigree, took that horse for second, although Ward's horses invariably get overbet at Kentucky Downs. And then Desert Tempest for Brendan Walsh for third, another American Pharoah. He won with a first-time starter here last year by the name of Boxing Day at a price. And Vincent Chamonix, I think, is a rider you really need to pay attention to. I don't think he has a lot of experience at Kentucky Downs, but he's the kind of rider, I think, that'll have a lot of success here. And invariably, his horses, for the most part, are going to go off at bigger prices than they should.
I agree about Victor, and I ended up including him or landing on him in a couple of spots later on the card. Let's jump actually to the fourth, and we'll stick with the 2-year-old maiden theme. There is a middle pick four, a 14%, 50-cent middle pick four that starts with race four, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, and then of course there's all the normal late action, the pick five races six through ten, etc. But how about the boys going long?
Yeah, Vincent Chamonix again here, and Brendan Walsh, who had some success at Kentucky Downs last meet with the number 3, Fortune, 12-1 in the morning line. Steve, doing the expert pick videos for Twin Spires, tweeted this out earlier. Of the 10 races, and 8 of them, I've got 8-1 shots or higher on top, and this is just another one of those races. Brendan's got huge stats with blinkers on for the first time. On debut, this horse broke slowly, made up some sneaky ground behind a very well-intended even money winner in Deer District, who's going to be entered in one of the juvenile stakes on Saturday. The pedigree, Empire Maker, Forestry, the blinkers on, horse that has some experience, and going the distance of a mile, plays a little bit further than a mile. I think this is one of the horses that'll handle it after debuting at a mile around 2 turns in the first start.
I like it. All right. Let's get into the second half of the card. And do you want to look at the pick five? Do you have anything for the for that money allowance, the fifth?
Race five. Let me just fast forward through the past performances here. I got a 20-1 in this race, Steve. And again,
I love it.
You go by top pick selections, but, in these races, you got to remember, you asked me for some advice earlier. You got to be patient, man. You can lose and lose and lose and lose all day. And sometimes it only takes one at Kentucky Downs. You have to be willing to take your losses with the potential for a big score, because there's going to be a lot of nice prices. And I got Thundering Creed on top in this race. I thought ran two of the best races of her career at Churchill in May and June. Second behind Tis Splendid News when she was loose on the lead as the 4-5 favorite. Second behind Travel Column, who held her own in the Ballerina at Saratoga this past weekend. Then she was a dull 6 in that stake at Mountaineer, but that was a sloppy racetrack. I'm not going to hold it against her. You look at her synthetic track races at Turfway from this past winter. They were very good. She's never run on the turf, but I think she'll handle it just fine. And again, form darkened by that recent race at Mountaineer, but she's a much better filly than she showed that particular day. And again, most importantly, she's 20-1 on the morning line.
No, I like it. I thought that Social Chatter was the filly to beat, but Recoded is interesting to me at 12-1. Eric Foster, and this is a horse that had one start as a 2-year-old on grass, and going back, otherwise has been a dirt performer. But if the move returning to the turf corresponds, Recoded certainly can impact this race, but I'm going to have to take a long look at the 10 Thundering Creed, Joe Rocco for Mike Tomlinson, 20-1. Let's jump through, and I want to go to the stake, Joe, because I really struggled coming up with the decision in the Tappet.
We're fast forwarding here to the 8th, 9th. The Tappet is the 9th race. All right, let me...
Yes.
Page through there. Yeah, I mean, another great race, Steve. There's so many different ways you can go in so many of these races. The 12, I think, is obviously the one to beat after winning a tougher race at Kentucky Downs last year in Love. We've seen Paula Lobo do quite a bit of damage at Kentucky Downs in the past. That horse is going to get bet down. I mentioned earlier Horses for Courses, and Ramsey Solution won his only previous start at Kentucky Downs. It was back in September of 2020, and it was in the Tappet Stakes, and he won at 8-1 that particular day. Now, he only ran twice last year, both very good efforts at Churchill and Pimlico. He's only run once this year and ran completely against his stalking, pace-pressing style over the synthetic at Gulfstream, and it was a visually impressive victory. He had a fast pace to run at, but again, that's not normally his style. And I think Safi Joseph is going to be a trainer to really pay attention to at this meet. Just looking at the card today, the cards on Saturday and Sunday, he really seems to have pointed some of his horses to the Kentucky Downs meet and these lucrative purses, and Ramsey Solution looks like one of those. He hasn't raced since June. He's trained forwardly. We know he likes Kentucky Downs, and he's 8-1 in the morning line. So I gave him a very, very tepid nod, and like you said, what is a tremendous betting race, but to me, they all seem to be tremendous betting races on the card.
Joe, if you had one play of the day, was your strongest opinion?
Yeah, I mean, again, those Twin Spires videos. I like all the horses today, but I think one that I'm looking forward to, and I got to wait all the way to the finale, is Axe Thumb for again Safi Joseph, the 7 horse. Second.
That's,
yeah. You like that one too?
That's who I picked. That's great. Yeah.
Maybe that 8-1 morning line is steering us in the wrong direction, Steve. Because you look at 5 furlongs on the synthetic on debut behind a strong winner when speed was good on that surface, and this horse was hung 4 wide. And then you look at the pedigree, Into Mischief, Preemptive Attack, a Smart Strike mare. This horse is begging the stretch out. Safi's great with second-time starters. I mean, there's a lot to like about Axum in the finale, and if we get half that morning line, maybe 9-2, I think we both would take it.
Well, also, this happens to be, people have heard Ed Seltzer on the show with us for literally the entire run of At the Races for 17 years. We talk to Ed now and then, and always happy for him and Bev Anderson to do well. I just love that he also named a horse for Pete Axthelm. And it's funny, we're going to do a tribute here to Alan Dinkinson, to Dink, and it's funny that this horse comes up, that Axe comes up, a very kindred spirit and fellow traveler in a lot of ways. Joe, we'll check in with you during the meet. Are you going to come down to Franklin, and will we see you there next week?
This is normally the trip that I make is staying in East Nashville and being at Kentucky Downs every day. I'm not going to do that this meet, but I plan on being down there one or two days next week, maybe the 8th, maybe the 10th, or the 11th. So definitely plan on seeing you. And I know you're doing a tribute to Dink, Steve, and I just want to echo everybody's sentiments. He's universally loved. I think, you know, when he come into Churchill, you know, so many people were excited to see him. And I think one of the great things about Dink is that despite all the success he had in the wagering world, he never thought he was better than you, man. You see him on Twitter. You know, he's never talking down to people, always willing to help people, and just always, you know, in a great frame of mind and just loving what he was doing. So, you know, the community lost a good one there, and I think it's awesome that you're going to do, you know, quite a few tributes to him here today.
I appreciate it, and somebody that, you know, as I referenced, the horse playing community, you know, looked to, and you know, he just was a unique persona in so many ways, and you'll hear it from people who knew him best. And in fact, as we go to the break here, Paul Matisse is going to join us first. The Maven, David Goodfriend, will join us. Beth Raymer, his assistant, who wrote Let It Ride, I could literally just, you know, Jason Beam will join us as well. And I mean, there's just so many people. I mentioned Leo Vukmanovich, and Paul actually said to me that Zoe Cadman probably would love to come on and pay tribute. So we'll let anybody that wants to, you know, talk about Dink. I got to know him a little bit these last 7-8 years in Vegas when we'd go, you know, because of the proximity would have to the Matisses, and I had him on the broadcast a couple different times, and it just one of those people you just sort of sat in awe of. So Alan Dinkinson, for the next at least half hour, will pay tribute. Joe, good luck today, and I will see you next week, and we'll do a couple of these when I'm live from Kentucky Downs.
All right, sounds good, Steve. Have a good one.
Joey the K, everybody. Joe Christofek, and some opinions there, and the videos for Twin Spires players. Let's take our break. We'll come back, and very quickly in order, Paul Matisse, David Goodfriend, Beth Raymer, and Jason Beam to pay tribute to Dinky.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's Illinois' most successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities.